Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You're listening to Popcorn Podcast with Lee and Tim, and this week we're reviewing Freaky and the Comeback Trail, as well as all the latest trailer and movie news.
Let's get into it. I'm Timmy Fland, movie buff.
And I'm Lee Livingstone, entertainment journalist.
And we love to talk all things movies, so let's do it, Lee.
Let's get freaky.
All right, so the first movie we're reviewing is Freaky, and it's a twisted take on the traditional body swap movie that sees a reserved teenage girl switch bodies with a ruthless serial killer with only 24 hours to swap back before the change becomes permanent.
The movie stars Catherine Newton as Millie and Vince Vaughn as the Blissfield Butcher.
Isn't it great to see Vince Vaughn in a movie again?
I enjoyed him in this so much, and we'll talk about that later.
Of course. It's directed by Christopher Landon of Paranormal Activity franchise fame and also the Happy Death Day series as well.
From a screenplay by Landon and Michael Kennedy.
Okay, so let's talk about the story and the concept first. Yep. So it's kind of like this satire on the genre of horror slasher teenage. I mean, how good is the opening? It really does lean into that horror trope of a mass murder of, you know, dumb teenagers.
Yeah, it's really paying homage to like Jason and Friday the 13th with the mask covering his face and not saying anything. I love that he didn't have much of a script when he was the Blissfield Butcher. He was so terrifying.
He was terrifying. He wore this mask that was kind of just off to the mouth off to the center. It was definitely a call to Jason Voorhees of anything else.
It's not a new idea, this concept, but they're having so much fun with the twist on it. And that's what I really loved about this film. It's so much fun. I'm going to say that so much throughout the whole episode, but it is. It really is so much fun.
It certainly sets it up as this cheesy, but also knowingly cliched take on the genre, doesn't it? Like, it's very self-aware that it's going to throw so much cheese at you. You're going to be dodging blocks of cheese. And the cliche is just like, you just can't dodge the cliche. It's just like cheese and cliche coming at you from every angle. But it works, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit of a cheeky wink more than, you know, ripping off or making fun of this. It's laughing with it instead of at it.
And I think that the best way this film laughs at itself, right, is through Vince Vaughn's portrayal of his character when he is swapped bodies and he is portraying the teenage girl.
I really enjoyed seeing him in this performance. And didn't he do such a great job?
Like, physically, was so convincing.
And even the cadence of his voice, and it wasn't over the top. It wasn't cheesy, as you said. It wasn't crazy. I mean, it harkens back, I guess, to Jack Black's performance in Jumanji in the first one when he did really well with that. But I've never seen Vince Vaughn like this, and I just loved it.
That's such a great comparison. And I think that he probably did a better job than Jack Black. I mean, not that we're here to compare Jack Black and Vince Vaughn in this podcast, but I think that they were given a similar challenge, and I think Vince Vaughn really just went for it.
And you usually see Vince Vaughn in these kind of snarky or sarcastic roles, and it was just so refreshing to see him do something like this and do it so well.
Mm.
And the sheer ridiculousness of the situations that he was put in just lend itself to great comedy.
Oh, 100%. Can we talk about the concept itself? Now, look, we clearly really enjoyed this movie.
Yeah.
And I love a slasher flick that goes to all sorts of, you know, ridiculous directions. Like, I'm all for it. But maybe they just didn't give a shit. But the whole premise about this magical dagger, this sacrificial dagger from what Mayan times in Mexico, or whatever, you know, if you don't follow through with the sacrifice properly, it then means that you swap consciousness, you swap bodies. And then if you don't follow through with the sacrifice within 24 hours, you are then stuck in that body forever.
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt like it was knowingly such a sloppy explanation.
Really?
Yeah, I just thought they just didn't quite nail that. I mean, look, you're not meant to believe everything that this movie, what happens in this movie. I get it. But I think it must have done it on purpose because I felt like they didn't really nail that concept very well.
But when you think of the movies that it's sort of nodding to, like Freaky Friday, for example.
Yeah.
It's not really explained very well how this happens.
It's true.
A wish or a dream or something. Like, it's what it's supposed to be, I think.
I think this movie, I need to take my critic's hat off or just tilt it to the side a little bit and not kind of like pull apart the script so much.
Can we get back to Vince Vaughn's performance a little bit more?
Because
I found it so interesting that the way he portrayed himself as the teenage girl was so utterly convincing, which is crazy, but it shows how effective gender performance can be in a biologically different body, just on another level.
Yeah. What do you think he nailed so much?
Just then? That it wasn't making fun of teenage girls or looking down on teenage girls. It was, he really embodied a teenage girl.
Yeah.
He was so convincing.
Yeah. And I mean, the character of Millie was going through a lot, wasn't she?
Mm-hmm.
She was bullied severely. She had some challenging home life with her mom. Mm. You know, her father passed away the year before. Her mom was an alcoholic.
Mm.
Her sister was a local cop who obviously played a pivotal role later in the film in trying to save the day. And yeah, I guess he brought humanity to the role. Like, he got her, and it wasn't, I guess you're right, he wasn't making fun of her.
And even in the interactions with her high school crush, I actually found that more believable than when she was in her own body and interacting with him. And to be fair, they didn't get a lot of screen time together like that. So, you know, fair enough. And no shade at Catherine Newton at all, because she's fantastic too. But yeah, it was hilarious and so convincing.
Oh, utterly. Can we talk about Catherine Newton's performance and that fucking stare?
She's terrifying.
She's absolutely terrifying. It will give me nightmares if I just think back to that stare. She played sinister incredibly well.
So well. And what I really love is that they weren't unbelievable in her abilities. So when she was the Blissfield Butcher, she's still in the body of a teenage girl. So she couldn't do the things, or he couldn't do the things that he used to be able to do. And I love that they were stayed true to that.
Yes.
So she had to come up with creative ways to kill people because she didn't have that brute strength that Vince Vaughn had.
I think they did really well in having the characters understand their bodies when they had swapped and kind of like, okay, being very conscious of their abilities. You know, that funny moment in the bathroom where, you know, she's standing up weeing. Well, he's standing up weeing. I don't know. Who do you say? He, she. And, you know, that was, you know, expected and a bit crude, but it was very funny and effective.
But
and then when she's throwing people around, you know, she's getting thrown around a lot because she's this serial killer, but in a, you know, 16-year-old's body or whatever.
But I like that they didn't go to the obvious place with that where, you know, look, staring at your genitals and feeling yourself up. There was a little bit of a, oh, I've got boobs. But you know what I mean? They didn't go to that place, and I liked that.
Yeah. I mean, they touched on it very quickly and then moved on because there are other things to do, clearly. One bugbear I had was the spatial awareness of this film. And again, I think it's doing it on purpose. The fact that it's a horror trope where you cut and they're miles down the road, or, you know, they're around the corner. And, they're spending so much time in this school, and he is a known serial killer. Like, everyone in the town and the school recognizes him, but they spend a ridiculous amount of time just casually out in public.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, where is the understanding that you need to hide and be incognito a little bit more here?
Yeah. He tries to do that with the help of Millie's friends, Josh, played by Misha Oshurovich, and Nyla, played by Celeste O'Connor, who we're going to see in Ghostbusters Afterlife.
Oh, yes.
What did you think about their performances and their relationship with Millie?
I think they definitely came to fruition more in the body swapping moments. Like you mentioned before, you didn't really get a sense of their friendship before the body swap, but it almost didn't matter because their friendship came through and felt really organic anyway. Mm. And look, the character of Josh, you know, he was playing a gay kid and he calls that out himself.
Did you think that was a little bit over the top? I felt like that character was a little stereotypical, but it worked maybe?
Yeah, it worked. I mean, I found him a little bit annoying, to be honest.
Okay.
But I mean, it wasn't too much of a bugbear for me personally.
So there were so many nods to cult horror tropes and films that we've spoken about already. The foreshadowing, the falling down at crucial times, jocks behaving badly,
and yes,
gruesome killings. Did you like that?
I liked that. I particularly loved a gruesome killing. I love being shocked in these movies. And I think there were several times where I was covering my face. Mm-hmm. Did you notice that? Or like I couldn't look at the screen because you know what's coming.
Yeah.
It's expected. Like if it wasn't as gory as it was, I probably would have been disappointed because it just needed to go to those extremes. This movie was definitely tapping into extremes of the horror genre.
But it wasn't too gory. Like, they didn't show things in ridiculous detail that take away the effect of that. You know what I mean? Like, you got some, you get blood splatter, you get some crazy decapitations and things. But sometimes these movies can go way over the top and show, like, entrails and all that kind of thing. And you go,
Saw kind of went a bit too far, didn't it, in that sort of gore?
I feel like this movie walked the line perfectly. I can't sing the praises high enough.
Okay. So, are we ready to deliver our rating? Lee, how many popcorn kernels will you give Freaky?
Well, as I've said a million times, it's such a fun movie. Vince Vaughn is a revelation. So is Catherine Newton. It really is so, so good. So, I'm going to give it 4 popcorn kernels.
Oh, wow. I'm not going to be too far behind you. I agree that the highlight of this film was certainly Vince Vaughn. It was great to see him on screen again doing something really, really fun.
Yeah.
And you could see how much fun he had. And I thought it was a great homage to horror films and it went to all those extreme levels. I was dodging cheese and cliche left, right and center. So I had a really good time. I'm going to give it 3 popcorn kernels.
That's Freaky, which is in cinemas now. Run like a serial killer is chasing you to watch it.
I love it.
So let's move on to The Comeback Trail. The Comeback Trail follows the story of 2 movie producers who owe money to the mob. To make money quickly, one decides to set up their aging movie star for an accidental on-set death to collect the insurance money. But it goes hilariously wrong, of course.
It goes so wrong. It's directed by George Gallo, who wrote the original Bad Boys. It's a very interesting piece of trivia. I didn't really get flavors of Bad Boys in this, but anyway, worth calling out. It's also written by George Gallo and Josh Posner, and it's based on the film by Harry Hurwitz, which it's based on an original film from 1982, so it's kind of a remake, if you will.
Well, this one stars Robert De Niro, Zach Braff, Morgan Freeman, Tommy Lee Jones, and Emile Hirsch. What a cast.
I freaking love this cast so, so much. I just need to launch straight into how fucking amazing Robert De Niro was in this movie.
He's always amazing, though. It's not a surprise, is it?
It's not a surprise, but I feel like he just went to this whole other level. He was absolutely hysterical, but then he sets up the tone of this whole movie because what transpires is just mass hysteria everywhere you look. Yeah. So I think he was just so fantastic in this movie.
So it's structured like a 70s movie where they're making a movie within a movie.
Yeah.
And or a bit like a spaghetti western maybe. Sort of eccentric and told through the lens of a man, obviously, as 70s movies tended to be.
Yeah. I love the genre of a movie about making a movie. Probably because I'm such a film nerd. So any insight that I can get into the movie making process, the relationships, how things work, don't work, the little side hustles, you know, and this is just dripping in absolute fraud and intrigue and mystery and manipulation. And I think it's really interesting and very, very funny how they've pulled it off.
I got flavors of maybe Get Shorty, you know, grifting in the movie business, or, you know, Loan Sharks, and or maybe a Coen Brothers film.
Definitely had flavors of a Coen Brothers film. That's very true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you think about the pacing of the movie?
The pacing of the movie, I felt when I was watching it early on, probably in the first half an hour, that it was taking too long. However, I really enjoyed it because it was setting. There were almost three very clear acts to this movie. It just took its time for you to understand who the characters were, where they were coming from, what their situation was. And then once the energy started to kick in when they were in production of this movie with Tommy Lee Jones as a lead actor, I thought I really appreciated the time that it took to set up the premise and everything that it did. I felt like if it had got to that moment too quickly, it would have felt rushed. Mm. Does that make sense? How did you feel about the pacing?
Yeah, it was a bit slow in places, a bit uneven, but I enjoyed it. I laughed so hard.
Yeah, so hard. Because the pacing let you get to know the characters more. Yep. It was definitely a slow at the beginning because you needed to understand how these people ticked and their circumstance and how desperate they were to be heard, seen and heard, and make cash.
But by the same token, it didn't really go into a lot of detail with characters like Morgan Freeman's character as the loan shark baron, or Zach Braff, for example, was really just a straight man to Robert De Niro's hysteria.
Totally.
Or Tommy Lee Jones's backstory either.
Oh, okay. Now that you're calling all those out, you are right. Yeah. I guess the sub-characters remained sub-characters, and it definitely was De Niro's film. He was the producer. He was the one that had fucked up time and time again. He needed to solve this problem. And I had no issue with how much screen time he had. But I agree that maybe if we got to know Tommy Lee Jones a little bit more, I loved how Emile Hirsch, that big-time Hollywood producer, came and went, you know, more in the bookends of the movie.
Yeah. Well, he's more of a supporting character, but when you get, you know, Morgan Freeman and Tommy Lee Jones on the ticket, you expect them to be all equal footing. And I was a little bit disappointed at the screen time that Morgan Freeman got. I would have liked to have seen him have more to do rather than just sit around on a lounge, be a bit more terrifying.
Yeah, he wasn't particularly terrifying, was he? That's a very good point.
I mean, no shade at Morgan Freeman.
No.
The performances of all these actors, like, you put all these actors together in a film and you're guaranteed a good time.
Yeah. I felt that one of my favorite scenes in the movie, and there are so many to call out, but this one in particular, and I felt it was the turning point in the movie when they went to the nursing home. And I just lapped that up so much. Just the chaos that ensued, like a beautiful crescendo that led them to Tommy Lee Jones, I thought was just a perfect piece of writing and pacing and character and like it was just so, so fantastic.
And Zach Braff's terror at being cornered by all these old women going, I'll give me a role in your movie.
Yeah. Oh, look, I was impressed with Zach Braff. Even though he was a bit of a side character, he was quite good.
Yeah. He can definitely hold his own among these legends of the screen.
Did you love the music of this movie as well? I felt like it was so epic in its stature and presence, and it added a lot of jeopardy and atmosphere through it. It felt like you were watching this big, epic Hollywood Western movie, but it was, you know, but from behind the scenes. I thought it was a really nice element to the film and in the storytelling mechanic.
Yeah, the use of music felt really fitting. It was perfect from that era, and also, a big Hollywood sweeping epic, which this isn't.
No.
But it fits perfectly in the film. I did have to laugh just talking about, like, the movie and how it's made. I had to laugh at all the one-shot takes that somehow had close-ups and different angles when they were using one camera to film the shots. But when they showed it later, there's all these different angles and close-ups. And I'm like, when did you do all that?
I know. That was funny. And I think that was playing into the satire of it as well, because the shots they were using weren't the in-camera shots that the director was capturing, but the shots that we had seen as the viewer. So it was kind of like they were, pulling all these shots that supposedly existed in their camera that didn't. And I thought it was really, really clever.
Very clever.
Yeah, it was clever.
Are we ready to review this one?
Yeah, perfect. Okay, so I thought this movie was so much fun. It was clever despite it being predictable at times, but it was so self-aware of that and you just went on for that ride. I thought De Niro was excellent. I thought Tommy Lee Jones just, he still delivered this leading man, you know, persona about him. I thought he had a lot of charisma behind his character as well. And I was very impressed by Zach Braff and Emil Hirsch dipping in and out as well. So I'm going to give this one 4 popcorn kernels.
Okay. Well, it's always amusing when Hollywood pokes fun at itself and you get this cast together and it's always going to be entertaining. I'm going to give it 3.5 kernels.
So The Comeback Trail is in Australian cinemas now.
Grab your posse and see it. Full of the puns today. I'm loving these.
I am loving them sick. So now on to movie and trailer news. But before we do, we're very excited because it's time to announce another giveaway. We are delighted to be giving away 5 double passes to see The Witches in Australian cinemas from December 10. The movie is a reimagining of the Roald Dahl story and stars the lovely Anne Hathaway, the amazing Octavia Spencer, and the always delightful Stanley Tucci.
To enter, all you have to do is head to the Popcorn Podcast Facebook or Instagram page, make sure you like it, and drop a comment on the giveaway post tagging your coven.
All right, Lee, this piece of news is fantastic. Is it? I don't know. I'm going to throw to you. Go on.
Gerard Butler has signed on for a 4th movie in the Has Fallen franchise. I feel like this is a bit of an accidental franchise. Like,
I don't know how it still exists.
I don't know. The movie's called Night Has Fallen. I'm not sure who Night refers to.
No, because it's been Olympus Has Fallen.
Angel Has Fallen.
So, like, who's Night? Very strange. Anyway, we'll just have to wait and see.
Butler will return to the character of Mike Banning, who was promoted to director of the Secret Service at the end of the last film, which seems like it'd be a cushy desk job. Not if we know anything about this character.
Look, it's the franchise that keeps on giving, so let's wait to see the first trailer drop and we'll make a decision on how excited we are or aren't.
We got the first look images of a movie called Gunpowder Milkshake, which is coming in 2021. Tell us what this movie's about.
So it's about a secret sisterhood that comes to the rescue of a mother-daughter assassin team, which sounds pretty sick. It stars Michelle Yeoh, Karen Gillian, Angela Bassett, and Paul Giamatti, which, heck, what a lineup.
This looks really good. I feel like 2021 is going to be the era of kick-ass ensemble films for women.
Oh, 100%. I mean, it's just going to be kick-ass for cinema in general. Like, we're just so jam-packed with film releases.
I'm so ready for movies. Give me more movies.
I think we need to, like, buy a seat in a cinema. And just like, you know, the whole working from home thing, you know, we're being really flexible. I'm just going to work from a cinema because we're just going to be there so often next year. Can't wait.
Shouldn't we have our own box seat by now anyway?
Oh, yes, darling. We'll sort that out.
So Johnny Depp has been asked to leave the Fantastic Beast franchise due to the controversy surrounding his court battles with ex-wife Amber Heard. Mm. But this is really amazing, isn't it? He's still pocket his 10-figure salary despite the fact that he only filmed 1 scene.
Right, so they'd started filming and then they fired him.
Yep, or asked him to leave. So basically he got a redundancy package worth millions of dollars.
Well, look, I think that's the result of very good lawyer or contract that means he, you know, just pockets that no matter what happens to the film and his involvement. But it almost makes me feel a little bit icky, doesn't it? Mm. That, you know, he's been asked to leave this family franchise because of his ongoing legal battles with domestic violence, which is very, very serious. But he's kind of, I wouldn't say rewarded, but he's not being reprimanded enough. Like, you know, he takes away a 10-figure salary. That's pretty extraordinary.
Well, I mean, I don't think he's been found guilty. So that's kind of a dangerous, slippery slope where, you know, do you start punishing people based on public opinion? This is a difficult thing.
You are so right. And I guess it's, difficult to comment on that, isn't it? But it's pretty extraordinary circumstance that Warner Brothers and Johnny Depp found themselves in regardless.
One thing, though, who should take over the role?
Oh, that is very good. I always found Johnny Depp probably wasn't the best piece of casting for Grindelwald.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know who to suggest.
Could they somehow pivot it back to Colin Farrell?
Of course. That was actually a bit of a slap in the face because he is such a good actor. And then it turned out that, oh no, lol, it's actually Johnny Depp. It's like, no, can we get Colin Farrell back? That's such a good idea.
But maybe that wouldn't work because he's already used that disguise.
But he's out and about anyway, so it's not a disguise.
Yes,
so,
true.
Yeah, he could just revert back to it and not give a shit. I don't know. That's a really good idea.
Time will tell.
So we got the trailer for Super Intelligence starring the hilarious Melissa McCarthy and James Gordon, when an all-powerful super intelligence chooses to study average Carol Peters, I love the name, it's so perfect, played by McCarthy, the fate of the world hangs in the balance. As the AI decides to enslave, save, or destroy humanity, it's up to Carol to prove that people are worth saving.
And super intelligence is coming to Australian cinemas on December 17th, so we don't have to wait long for that one.
Not long. Bring it on.
What do you think about the casting choice of James Corden as the artificial intelligence?
Well, they kind of call that out in the trailer that it's like, you sound like James Corden. It's like, I'm not James Corden, but his likeness, his voice was assigned for something that she had done in the past. Look, I don't know. I feel like he's a little bit oversaturated, to be honest. How do you feel about his casting?
Well, I think Ricky Gervais said that once and they've had a beef ever since about it.
Oh, it should be Ricky Gervais. That would be better.
Mm.
It'd probably be a bit drier.
Okay. I love Ricky Gervais, but yeah, it would be a bit too dry, I think. We also got a trailer for Happiest Season, which is a holiday romantic comedy that captures the range of emotions tied to wanting your family's acceptance, being true to yourself, and trying not to ruin Christmas in the process.
It stars Dan Levy of Schitt's Creek fame. We've got Mackenzie Davis in there and Kristen Stewart. And I think this is going to be a really beautiful film. Mm-hmm. Did you get good vibes from this?
Yeah. I love a good holiday ensemble film that's all about family and the trials and tribulations that go along with that.
It's things that people can really, really relate to at the time of the holidays and being all together as a family. So that's coming to cinemas on November 26.
We also got a trailer for Wild Mountain Time, which is about a pair of star-crossed lovers in Ireland who get caught up in their family's land dispute, starring Emily Blunt, John Hamm, Christopher Walken, and Jamie Doran. Now, this looks terrible, and I hate to say that because I love Emily Blunt. Jamie Dornan is about the only Irish person in it.
Okay, so he's Irish?
Yeah.
Because I was so distracted by Christopher Walken's Irish accent.
I know.
I'm like, he still sounds like Christopher Walken. I'm not going to try and do a Christopher Walken accent because I'll embarrass myself.
Don't even try doing Christopher Walken doing Irish.
No, I mean, gosh, you'll have an aneurysm trying because I think he's almost having one himself.
I mean, it's a cool cast and
beautiful
it
cast.
Would probably look like a great story, but I just could not connect with this at all.
Do you think because the trailer was fucking all over the shop? You didn't really get a sense of what the movie was about. It just kept chopping and changing. But Emily Blunt does look really, really sweet and charming. So I think we'll get something from Emily in this movie.
It's coming in 2021 with a date yet to be confirmed.
Okay, Lee, I think I might take this one.
Please, I can't.
I'll just say it out loud and then you can have a comment off the back of it. So we're about 6 weeks from Wonder Woman 1984.
Don't say it.
To open in theatres on Boxing Day in Australia. And Warner Brothers execs are at the moment considering whether to push the highly anticipated superhero sequel to the summer of 2021 or keep the movie on its December theatrical debut and then put it on HBO Max streaming service, which in Australia we don't have, so I don't know what that means for us. And they'd be looking to put that on that streaming service in early January, which isn't a very long theatrical release. It kind of be in tandem. So we're not sure how to feel about this, but Lee, what do you want to say?
I don't mind if they keep it on the December release because then that means the rest of the world will get it.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll do a short release in America and then put it on HBO Max in America.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, HBO Max is really struggling to compete with things like Disney and Netflix. So this would be a massive boost for them. It'd be a smart way to go for sure.
Yeah.
And I think people like me, for example, will riot if it gets pushed to next summer.
Yeah.
But Patty Jenkins, the director, has been very adamant that she wants this film to be seen on the big screen and it really should be seen on the big screen.
Yeah, I completely agree. Look, this movie, if released to its full potential, will break $1 billion. So that's what's at stake here. Like, it's not just chump change. And there's a lot of money to be made out of this franchise.
But I think studios just need to understand that during this year, everyone needs to take the hit. Like, you're not going to make that amount of money back. You're still going to lose money this year if you push things. So just do it. Just release it. And there's so much content backed up waiting to go. And people are hungry for these movies.
Oh, so hungry.
Just give it to them and take the hit. You can afford it.
The thing is that if it does move to summer of 2021, it then sets off this domino effect. So even though we might get Wonder Woman in July or whatever, it means that the film that was originally scheduled there, it just gets pushed back to the end of the year or beginning of the year after. And it's just an absolute mess.
Mm.
It's very stressful, I can imagine, for all distributors and film businesses around the world. But look, in Australia, we're here. We're ready.
We're ready.
Cinemas are open. Our friends in Melbourne, their cinemas are open now, which is fantastic. It's like, we're a market that is here. We've got cash in our pockets and we will go and see film. We will go and see cinema this holiday season.
Give it to us. They need to let go of this day and date release model that they've had a stranglehold on for, you know, decades.
Yeah.
Just let it go. This is a new world. Go with it.
What a soundbite to end another episode of Popcorn Podcast on. We reviewed The Comeback Trail and also Freaky.
Get out and see them. They're in Australian cinemas now.
Catch you next time.
Thanks for listening.
We have a website, popcornpodcast.com. Go check it out. We've got all our episodes up there for you to listen to.
If you'd like to get to know us a little better, there's an About Us section and we run giveaways, so keep an eye on the website for more information.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style. Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.